the people who had the most ability to change the country were the preachers and the pulpits. Problem is, the preachers in the pulpits were preaching the social gospel, the kind of gospel that asked the question, what would Jesus do if he saw children walking around with three fingers because there are no child labor laws? What would Jesus do if he saw people falling over in factories because they had no benefits and no health care? And they challenged America. Even Franklin Delano Roosevelt, his labor secretary, a female, was born of the social gospel movement, and she pushed Franklin Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt in 1912 was pushed by the social gospel movement until he declared that health care, living wages, a minimum wages, protecting the environment and education were moral issues. And they knew that if they were going to stop it, they had to take over the pulpit. So in a book by Kevin Cruz, he outlines how James Byfield was given all this big money. And inside of 10 years, he had 19,000 pulpits bought. He started a program on the radio called The Freedom Story. Huh? And his organization was the seed for what you saw in the Moral Majority with Fair Falwell, what you see now with his son, what you see now with all those folk who got the nerve to go in and PRA for a president. I believe you ought to pray, but if you pray, you also ought to prophesy. You ought to speak the truth. And you can't pray for the president, lay hands on him, while he's pray, P-R-E-Y-I-N-G, on the least of these. But Jesus said, inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me. Now, here, and I'm finished. They would not have gone after the moral movement if the moral movement wasn't powerful. And I've been saying, and Liz is saying, that to our progressive and sometimes liberal friends, we have got to stop being so mad with the people who have hijacked religion and hijacked morality, and we've got to take it back in the public square. We need a moral movement across this nation, indigenously, homegrown, state-based, state government focused, deeply moral, deeply constitutional, anti-racist, anti-poverty, pro-justice, pro-labor, transformative movement. We need to change the conversation. This is not about what is left versus right. This is about what is right versus wrong. Keeping millions of people from seeing a doctor is not a left policy or a right policy. It's a wrong policy. Kicking hardworking people and refusing to pay them a living wage is not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. When you alleviate unemployment, when you do not move this nation toward away from fossil fuels and then ensure that those workers that were there get training to go to new jobs, that's not left versus right. That's right versus wrong. Labor rights is about what's right versus wrong. Affordable housing is about what's right versus wrong. Social safety net is about what's right versus wrong. Making sure every child has the access and an opportunity and receive a high quality, well-funded, constitutional, diverse public education is not about left versus right, but about right versus wrong. Health care for all is about right versus wrong. Making sure we redo the criminal justice system and undo all of the ways it hurts poor blacks and poor whites and poor brown people is about right versus wrong. Voting rights is a moral issue. Women's right is a moral issue. LGBTQ rights is a moral issue. And making sure that everybody has equal protection under the law is non-negotiable. We need a moral movement.
We're out of time, but if you'd like to hear the rest of Reverend Dr. William Barber's speech, you can go to our SoundCloud account where we have the speech up in its entirety. Just go to SoundCloud/Sojourner Truth Radio. I'd like to thank the Poor People's Campaign for organizing this event and for them to allow us here on Sojourner Truth to record it to be able to bring it to you, our audience.
Thank you so much, Reverend William Barber with the Poor People's Campaign on the Moral Majority. The time is 9:04. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Press Watch. Stay tuned.
Happy New Year. This is Press Watch News You're Not Supposed to Know, and I'll just go ahead and get started. And don't be looking at the engineer. I asked Jenka to keep running Reverend Barber because he was rocking, and I'm glad that we ran the whole thing, such as it is. Well, 2018 was a year in which most of us spent a fair amount of time avoiding the news, didn't you? Didn't you? Especially when that orange head started talking. It wasn't just bad news. With the fires and the hurricanes, it was appalling and degrading news as U.S. imperialism and mass incarceration flew hand in hand with the Saudi totalitarian government's air assault on starving Yemen. There are two main political parties in the United States, one of which could be called the Hooray for Imperialism Party and the other the Shut Up About Imperialism Party. The Shut Up Party took a majority of the seats in the House of Representatives tomorrow, and that's supposed to be a relief. Indeed it is, if they counter Trump. But I can only say that because I don't live in Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, or currently a prison. Speaking of wanting to turn away from the news, watch the imperial establishment ooze back into warfare in Syria and Afghanistan despite the pronouncements of the so-called President Trump when he accidentally does the right thing while the Pentagon is there to quietly counter him. So having said that, I want to also point to the fact that there are now two people in Washington widely associated with the concept of socialism. Did I say socialism? Socialism! That is Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and they have both been quite active compared to their colleagues. The term socialism has been searched widely of late, according to Google Trends. And when on a whim I entered the term Grundrisse, I encountered a pleasant surprise. People are taking socialism seriously enough to look up the Grundrisse. What is it, you say? Well, I'm going to say what it is because when I looked it up, pardon me, I discovered that I've been inaccurate probably just for a little bit of time with the word Grundrisse, I'd say about 30 years. So Grundrisse is not, as I had said for all this time, a collection of the essential works of Marx, that is, the manifesto and that part in Capital where he describes how you turn a bolt of cloth into profits. No. It's the major, groundwork, Grundrisse, to Das Kapital. So, and it's huge. So when I've said, well, I've read the Grundrisse and you should too, I was wrong. Wrong. And I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that people are being serious enough to read this multi-volume work. And you need grounding in history and philosophy to understand where he's going with it. So that ain't for everybody. And it ain't for me either. I stick to the summaries by and large. But it is pleasant to see. I mean, of all those people looking up Grundrisse, some of them are going to be these serious folk that I have noticed. Just anecdotally, I suppose, I could say I've noticed that... Oh, how nice. Something for my cough. I've heard serious Marxists again, and I hadn't heard serious Marxists just going to cafes since the 70s. It used to be a thing. I mean, and the ones in the 70s, they were left over from the 60s, and they weren't as young as they were in the 60s. And now, you know, youngins, they ain't had kids. They ain't got a mortgage, but they're talking Marx, and that's encouraging. And we'll talk about a little bit of encouraging things before I just plunge into it. But this is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. I'm Teresa Mitchell. You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio, where we can actually have serious dissent, where we can actually say these things, where we can talk about imperialism, the I word, and socialism, the S word, and mass incarceration, the horror word, and poverty. And that's why I didn't want Reverend Barber to be truncated there. I'm glad he was able to get to the hoorah at the end of his speech, because if anyone can give a hoorah at the end of his speech, he can. Poor People's Campaign, something worth looking up. So, now, I want to go to some of the news items. Today's big news, in the Huffington Post, an article by Daniel Marins, a group of progressive lawmakers are trying to derail a fiscally conservative proposal put forward by the incoming House Democratic leadership, one that could potentially block votes on ambitious policy proposals like Medicare for All unless it's completely paid for. The pay-as-you-go rules, commonly known as pay-go, would require Congress to offset any increased spending with equal cuts or revenue increases elsewhere. The provision is contained in a larger package of rules for the incoming 116th Congress, which convenes on Thursday of this week. The fact that Democrats are using their newfound power to stress fiscal responsibility is baffling to some progressives. Fiscal responsibility was hardly mentioned in the 2018 elections, whereas big legislative ideas, which could be harmed by pay-go rules, were popular with voters. Now, speaking for myself, don't let this gloss past you. This is an old trick, and it does reflect the Pelosi faction's conservatism and their connection with corporate America, which doesn't want to get taxed. There are ways to pay for things, huge things. And when they're important to the powers that be, they get funded right away. How did they fund, you may ask, the multi-trillion dollar bailout of the big banks in 2007-28? They didn't bail us out. They bailed out the big banks. And as a result, the financial system is still tottering. But they found a way to fund that toot sweet. And if they want to fund Medicare for All, this is kind of what it's about, really, then there are various ways to do it. One way to do it would be to get three great big platinum coins and say each of these is worth $1 trillion, and now they're in the Treasury. And that effectively functions as a tax on every single U.S. dollar, every electronic configuration represented as a U.S. dollar in existence. But even at that rate, it could be done, excuse me, it could be done and not screw up the economy. And not only that, it would boost the economy. And this is another thing. It's like I'm supposed to be fired up about Medicare for All, and I suppose I am, as long as it covers everyone. But, you know, it's still not just socialized medicine, which is what we need, And that brings us back to the word socialism. Look it up. So that article on PAYGO, the PAYGO rules, the attempt by the Pelosi faction to stop the progressive changes that the consistently polled American people want. That's happening right now, so watch out for those PAYGO rules. Turning to a Joe Connison article in AlterNet on the afternoon of January 3rd, life will change irrevocably and in many ways for President Donald J. Trump, so that's today. When Democrats take control of the House of Representatives, one of the most important changes is personified by the new chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Gerald Nadler, Democrat of New York, a very able politician who has known Trump and sometimes thwarted his development schemes for decades. Nadler will be the new chair, I'm skipping ahead, of the committee where the impeachment programs and impeachment proceedings must begin, and where the liberal Democrat has served since the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Interviewed on local NPR station in New York on Wednesday, Nadler left no doubt that he will approach this rogue presidency far more aggressively than his predecessor, Robert Goodlatte, whose flaccid attitude mocked any thought of accountability. His innate seriousness is itself a grave threat to Trump. As he has made clear on more than one occasion, he will proceed without fanfare but also without fear to follow wherever the evidence leads, and if that means impeachment, the I word, he will get there in due course. For the moment, however, Nadler refuses any rush to judgment. He writes his first order, I say he writes, I mean Connison writes, his first order of business in accordance with the new House leadership generally is to defend Special Counsel Robert Mueller against any encroachment by the White House or the Justice Department. Quoting Nadler, Republicans did everything they could to sabotage the Mueller investigation. End quote. And Connison writes, that nonsense is over. Instead, the new judiciary chair will open this new era by demanding answers from the titular head of the Justice Department. Quoting Nadler again, we will call in Whitaker, the new so-called attorney general. And he said, if necessary, we will subpoena him. And another quote, impeachment is intended as a defense of the republic against a president who would aggrandize power, destroy liberty, destroy the separation of powers. We would need to see real evidence that the president has done various things with that kind of goal in mind if we were able to prove the Daniels payoff conspiracy, talking about Stormy Daniels. And if we were going to impeach the president, that would probably be Article Number 6. You'd see a few much more serious things, end quote. So that article, as I was saying, is on alternet.org. Now let's turn to some other news. A Chinese spacecraft has become the first ever to land on the far side of the moon, according to state-run media. This is from the British Guardian. In a giant leap for human space exploration, the China National Space Administration landed the robotic probe Chang'e 4 in the unexplored South Pole Aitken Basin, the largest, oldest, deepest crater on the moon's surface. And departing from that text, when they say unexplored, they mean no landers have been there, no human footfalls. And it, of course, has been thoroughly mapped by satellite, by NASA, and I suspect the Russians did that as well. Returning to the article, early reports of a successful landing sparked confusion after state-run media China Daily and CGTN deleted tweets celebrating the mission. China Daily's tweet said, China's Chang'e 4 landed on the moon's far side, inaugurating a new chapter in mankind's lunar exploration history. Official confirmation of the landing came 2 hours later via state broadcaster, which said the lunar explorer had touched down at 10:26 a.m. 2:26 a.m. Greenwich Meridian time. The Communist Party-owned Global Times also said the probe had successfully made the first ever soft landing on the far side of the moon. An image tweeted by the English-language version of CCTV showed the first close-up shot of the far lunar surface. The mission, they write, takes aim to detailed measurements. I'll try that again. The mission aims to take detailed measurements of the moon's terrain and mineral composition. The Aitken Basin is thought to have been formed during a gigantic collision very early in the moon's history. The collision is likely to have thrown up material from the moon's interior. Now, this article becomes news you're not supposed to know because I looked at the Google News roll. And just to double check, because, you know, they tailor those things, I went to a, incognito browser and checked again, and it just wasn't there. I mean, it wasn't just under the fold. They weren't covering it all for some reason. And it is huge news. One of the reasons it is huge news is it is taking place in the context of a change in propulsion technology. And I'm not just talking about Elon Musk's rockets. I'm talking about nuclear propulsion, and this has become a thing, especially since Putin's government has created a nuclear-propelled cruise missile. The U.S. first looked into nuclear-propelled cruise missiles in the 50s. The new space race, and the Chinese landing on the moon will ignite a new space race, because they intend to follow it very, just in a couple of years, they're going to put their taikonauts on the moon. And let me frame this. We see that there is authoritarianism on the rise. Not just the leaders, people are falling for it for whatever reason across the globe. And under authoritarian regimes, scientists tend to do wacky things, irresponsible things. For example, under Ronald Reagan, nuclear rockets were tested in the United States in the open air. Oh, yeah. And before that, when nobody was looking, the United States did even more extensive testing. They even intentionally blew up. They overpowered a rocket to see, you know, what it'd be like when it threw its control rods out into the air. So there was some problems creating, miniaturizing these thermal type reactor engines, but they were making great progress. But, you know, other things, budgetary concerns, shut it down. Well, this has changed, and this nuclear propulsion is going to pop up again. NASA is working on it. The Chinese are working on it. NASA wants to. I guess I have to give them credit. At least they're not going to try to blast the things into the atmosphere. They're going to blast the things out of the atmosphere and then fire them up once they're in orbit, which is more responsible, I guess, except unless you're living in the area where they mine the uranium. I'm not in favor of nuclear anything in a biosphere. In space, you know, if you want to mine it and produce it and do reactors in space, I think that's just great. Space is the place for radiation. Space is the place where radiation can just really, you know, kick the sandals off and have a good time. Radiation belongs in space. Hard radiation. Oh, yeah. No problem. Love technology. Get it out of here. But you need to know this stuff because this is what's coming up. Because for national chauvinistic reasons, basically, there's going to be a huge push now for NASA to come forward and for other countries to come forward with their nuclear propulsion, because you can just zip off to Mars with nuclear propulsion. You have a problem on the way, you can turn it around and come back. That's how much stronger the nuclear rockets are. Nuclear rockets are in your future. That's my big point on that. On that story, Chinese on the moon, things are going to change. And changing topic again, Radio Havana, Cuba. By the way, it's 9:20. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The Washington Post analysis of data on global terrorism shows that violence by white supremacists and other far-right attackers has been on the rise since Barack Obama's presidency and has surged since President Donald Trump took office. Of 263 incidents of domestic terrorism between 2010 and the end of 2017, one-third, 92, were committed by right-wing attackers, according to the Post's analysis. This is Washington Post by way of Radio Havana, Cuba, which I find amusing, quoting the Post from Havana. Terrorism researchers say right-wing violence sprouted alongside white anxiety about Obama's presidency and has accelerated in the Trump era. Trump and his aides have continuously denied that he has contributed to the rise in violence, but experts say right-wing extremists perceive the president as offering them tacit support for their cause. End quote. The study found that last year, 2018, was especially deadly, with 13 people dying, pardon me, in two incidents in the last months of the year. In the first incident in October, a gunman in the state of Kentucky attempted to enter a historically black church, then shot and killed two black patrons in a nearby grocery store. In the second incident, a man who expressed anger about a caravan of Central American refugees that Trump termed an invasion has been charged with gunning down 11 people in a Pittsburgh synagogue, and what media described as the deadliest act of anti-Semitic violence in U.S. history. In November, brought two more deaths. A U.S. military veteran who had railed online against women and blacks began shooting in a yoga studio in Tallahassee, Florida, killing two women and wounding five. And departing from the article, this is another incel killing. But returning to the article, overall, researchers say at least 20 people were killed during 2018 in suspected right-wing attacks. While Trump has blasted Democrats as an angry left-wing mob and the party of crime, researchers have identified just one fatal attack in 2018 that may have been motivated by left-wing ideologies. Among the right-wing terrorist attacks was a vehicle attack in August 2017 by a neo-Nazi man that killed one person and injured 35 others protesting a rally by white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia. Radio Havana says terrorism researchers say right-wing violence sprouted alongside white anxiety about Obama's presidency. Oh, well, that's a, pardon me, they're repeating themselves there, and I did too. Whoops. A similar report released in early November found that the number of attacks carried out by white supremacists and white right-wing extremists in the United States has grown significantly over the past decade. Now, this is 2019, and Project Censored has come out with their Project Censored list of, I think it's 23 items, maybe it's 25. And it's worth going to projectcensored.org to look at what they have to say about which stories were unreported, what news you were not supposed to know. And I have selected out a few of those. I want to read some of it and comment on that. One of them is another mistake that I've made over the years. I believe research on the effects of cell phone radiation has been widely suppressed. People have asked me over the years, Are cell phones really safe? And my response after a while was, well, I suppose that they more or less are, because otherwise there would be an increase in cranial glioma, in brain cancer deaths. Well, apparently I was wrong, because the research has been suppressed. So turning to Project Censored, their item number 4 for this year. A Kaiser Permanente study published December 2017 in Scientific Reports conducted controlled research testing on hundreds of pregnant women in the San Francisco Bay Area and found that those who have been exposed to magnetic field non-ionizing radiation associated with cell phones and wireless devices had 2.72 times more risk of miscarriage than those with lower MF, magnetic field exposure. And if I can just stop right there, that's huge. And so this is a mistake that I will seek to correct in my own coverage and commentary. But returning to the article, furthermore, the study reported that the association was much stronger when MF was measured on a typical day of participants' pregnancies. According to the lead investigator, Deacon Lee, the possible effects of MF exposure have been controversial because from a public health point of view, everybody is exposed. If there's any health effect, the potential impact is huge. A March 2018 investigation for The Nation by Mark Hertzgard and Mark Dowie showed how the scope of this public health issue has been inadequately reported by the press and underappreciated by the public. Hertzgard and Dowie reported that the telecom industry has employed public relations tactics, first pioneered by Big Tobacco in the 1960s and developed by fossil fuel companies in the 1980s, to influence both the public's understanding of wireless technologies and regulatory debates. The wireless industry has war-gamed science by playing offense as well as defense, actively sponsoring studies that result in published findings supportive of the industry while aiming to discredit competing research that raises questions about the safety of cellular devices and other wireless technologies. Now, once again, I want to speak for myself and say this is the sort of thing that I'm generally talking about when it sounds like I'm being anti-science. I'm not anti-science. I'm anti-corporate perversion of science. When there is a scientific question or a scientific error, my answer is all the science. All the science. Not just the science that looks good for the rich. And that kind of brings me back to the nuclear industry. But returning to the article, when studies have linked wireless radiation to cancer or genetic damage, industry spokespeople have pointed out that the findings are disputed by other researchers. This strategy has proven effective, they reported, because the apparent lack of certainty helps to reassure customers, even as it fends off government regulations and lawsuits that might pinch profits. As Hertzgard and Dowie concluded, lack of definitive proof that a technology is harmful does not mean the technology is safe, yet the wireless industry has succeeded in selling this logical fallacy to the world. Here again, I want to speak for myself. Lack of definitive proof that a technology is harmful does not mean the technology is safe. Now, this is an element of scientific literacy that needs to be widespread in the journalistic community. Journalism, at its core, needs people who understand enough science, who are curious enough about science, who have enough space to report. They can actually bring a scientific literacy to the world. And when education is restricted, when we don't have enough scientists, when they're not paid enough to actually have the time to do the work and or to get the education, then we get this sort of slick techniques, you know, from the tobacco industry, from the nuclear industry, from the cell phone industry. They know how to hide what they do, how to increase their profits by avoiding responsibility for the deleterious effects of their technology. So, and this brings me again to, you're listening to community radio, where we can actually say these things. Community radio, KBOO Portland. And how do we have community radio? I ask Socratically. We have it because you pay for it. Thank you for paying for it. I was looking at how PressWatch is funded, and I find that a great number of you are repeat offenders. You come back and pay money into PressWatch during the pledge drives. Thank you very much. That is very encouraging. I really appreciate that. I think that community radio needs more support. Community radio journalism needs more support, and you need community radio because we can talk about these things. We can talk about socialism, we can talk about imperialism, we can talk about poverty. People, one of the things in Project Censored, which I encourage you to look up, projectcensored.org, is people have been bussed across the U.S. to cut cities' homeless populations. Cheap trick. Well, I've run out of time. At 9:30, Fight the Empire with host Per Fagering welcomes journalist and author Stephen F. Cohen to discuss his new book, War with Russia, From Putin in Ukraine to Trump in Russia Gate at 10. It's Flashpoints at 11 Between the Covers at 11:30 Black Book Talk. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. You've been listening to Press Watch on 90.7 FM on our big transmitter on the West Hills, and you've been listening on KBLO.FM, and in that manner, we go out to you, to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Then we walked back to the road, unchained.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on his birthday, Tuesday, January 8th. Come ride your bike around Portland with Diablo.